the ACLU opposing more due process. Plus, why did Trump let the Saudis off the hook? And more scandal on Michael Avenatti in this edition of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim Donner and Scott Cosenza coming at you double barrel this week. Tim from our nation's capital and Scott in the shadows of Independence Hall. What a patriotic Thanksgiving this has been, Scott.
The first nation's capital is where I am.
Oh, Tim. I see. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So,
yeah, everything's Ben Franklin up there, right? Like Ben Franklin was the only one that had anything to do with the country's founding.
You know what? When I go to Yankee Stadium, I expect to see a lot of Babe Ruth memorabilia.
Yeah, well, that's okay. True.
So, well, what are you going to do, right?
All right. Fair enough, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. We're going to by the way, that's an appropriate comparison, all right? Just for the record.
Ah.
He was a heavy hitter.
Babe Ruth to Ben Franklin.
That's right. Who all invented right. Swim fins, okay? was instrumental and elemental in our constitutional republic, and also his experiments on electricity gave us...
I love that. Also electricity. Yeah. Primarily swim fins, but also by the way, electricity for what too. That's worth.
Yes.
that's what I never knew he invented swim fins.
See, there you go.
Now, there's a real...
I'll accept your apology about okay, mocking
him earlier, I apologize.
Right?
I didn't realize that he had started the Industrial Revolution 100 years earlier than we had thought. All right, so to the matter at hand, we got Title IX and ACLU. Let's start with that and the protections that Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, on whom you have had a crush for some time.
By the way, compounded even more now.
Yes, that's right.
To be sure.
Betsy DeVos has done something revolutionary. She has reintroduced due process to the college adjudication of charges of rape and other allegations made primarily against males. But I guess, Scott, the ACLU... It brings to mind, you know, the thing from Saturday Night Live. We need more cowbell.
I guess
she says we need less. The ACLU says we need less due process.
Well, let me set the table here, Tim. When Barack Obama announced his reelection campaign on that same day, the Office of Civil Rights released a quote unquote guidance for colleges and universities in the form of a quote-unquote dear colleague letter. And that dear colleague letter said, these are the things that we expect that you should be doing. And if you don't do these things, then we expect we may revisit whether or not you're eligible to receive federal funding. Now, almost every college and university in this country, and by almost, I mean if there are three or four that don't, that's a lot, receives federal funding in one form or another, whether it's accepting students who take federal student aid or some other thing. And so it would be literally a death knell for a college or university to lose that federal funding. So as we go forward and we talk about it, it's part of the Code of Federal Regulations, but it does mean it's an existential question for the schools in question. That's the penalty hanging over their head. So this letter comes out and says, this is what we expect and want you to do. And one of the things that it did was it changed the definition of sexual harassment legally from a sort of pervasive and ongoing thing that actively denied educational opportunities to people based on sex, which is what Title IX was designed to prevent, to what amounted to essentially, Tim, and I'm not being flippant here, I'm trying to be descriptive, with anything that any woman could say was offensive.
Boil it down to this simple statement that essentially what the Obama second-term presidency was saying was that on college campuses, the accused is presumed guilty and not really given an opportunity to prove their innocence. Doesn't it pretty much come down to that?
It's awful close to that. And I will give like one quick example. There are a number of cases like this. So this isn't like the only one. There's easily a dozen just like this that we know about. So if you know there's a dozen, there's got to be four dozen that we don't know about, right? Where a woman has relations with a guy, and then later on, somebody finds out about it that she wished was kept secret from. In the case I'm thinking of, I think it was an Amherst woman who had intercourse with her roommate's boyfriend. And then later on, the roommate found out about it. And so she said she was raped or assaulted. I don't know if it was an actual, you know, I don't know if she said the word rape or something less than rape, but
sexual assault.
In any case, because it would be more convenient for her to be the victim survivor of sexual assault than it would be to be a treacherous, you know, wench who cheats on her roommate's boyfriend, right? So there's a disciplinary hearing at the school. They have her text messages, which say to her, not the roommate, to a different friend about how she initiated the hookup, okay? That she was the quote-unquote aggressor, meaning, you know, it was her choice. And this is so, immediately after he left her dorm room, she then instituted a new communication with a different man to then come to her dorm room right then to, I guess, finish the job. So this is all in the record. And the administration says, yeah, but still.
Yeah, but still.
And kicked him out anyway.
Well, this is,
they lost in court. And so these places are, these abuses are being heard in court. And while it's not every wrong student that gets redress in the courts, we do see a lot of them. But Tim, when she instituted her new policy, what she said, God, you want to give her a hug and a kiss for this. She says, you shouldn't have to go to court to have your rights respected, okay? And so the Department of the Office of Civil Rights, Betsy DeVos, put out a new guideline today, replacing the Obama guidelines. And these new guidelines basically say you have to give these people due process protections.
Now, isn't this the same thing as remember Hands Up, Don't Shoot? And they then found out that the whole thing was a hoax. There wasn't a hands up. And the officer was completely let off the hook, completely exonerated. And yet they carried on and used that same thing. Well, still, it highlights the issue of racial violence from police, even when it's not true. So, I mean, it's like the left has evolved from the system is so corrupt that we have to bring it to heel to, well, we'll use examples, whether they're real or not, to bring to light the injustices in the system. I mean, isn't that really what...
This is something we can talk about a little bit more with the Avenatti thing if we get to it, Tim, but this is like a believe all women thing.
Right.
You know, the evidence is smacking you in the face. And by the way, the evidence, which is going to cost millions of dollars for the college if they don't look at this evidence. I mean, that's the other thing. But they're actually so scared. You know, it plays into all their politics. So the people you presume at Amherst that are in the administrative capacity are the most rabid lefty of leftists, right? I mean, the college environment is lefty anyway. Amherst is lefty within college environments, and administration there must be, right? Unless they're like 100 years old holdovers, they got to be wacky left. So then you have this guidance from the Office of Civil Rights, which only encourages more and more of that. It's all gas pedal and no brake, Tim, for the revocation of the civil rights of the males on campus.
So you have... honestly, a lot more, you place a lot more credence in the American Civil Liberties Union than I do, Scott. The ACLU to me has always been a leftist organization that stands up for the civil liberties in cases where leftists would profit from their advocacy. Occasionally, they will drop in, for example, defending Nazis' right to march on Skokie just so they can seem even-handed. But really, the ACLU, hasn't their agenda been a far-left one for as long as we can remember?
They have always been a lefty group. And I would say to you, you know, who's the perfect group out there for me to support, Tim? There is none. We have to take our allies where we can find them. And in spite of, or perhaps even because of their leftiness, they have done an excellent job of advocating for our freedoms and rights on many occasions. Some of our bedrock foundational sort of rulings are due to their work. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to respect that, I think. And it makes it all the more tragic when they abandon it. And I'll talk about that right now, which is, so just a couple of the protections that the DeVos new guidance kind of reversed or modified from the Obama stuff. Number one is a confrontation clause. Now, so just to be clear, we're not talking here about a criminal proceeding. If a woman on campus believes that she was sexually assaulted, wants to complain about that sexual assault, she could call the police. I would hope that she would call the police, Tim. That's the appropriate thing to do. When I talk to my relations that are in young women in my family that are in college, I tell them, don't go to campus authorities if something happens. Call 911 and go to the police. Those are the people who, to the extent that they are able, are better capable at handling criminal investigations. College administrators are notoriously awful at this kind of thing. So,
no,
but for reasons I don't understand, there is this impetus to stay within in the campus environment. Okay. So anyway, what they've done is they've added this confrontation clause. And what that says is not you, the person, get the right to confront your accuser, which is what's currently being misreported, by the way. And it's being misreported in a way that says, like, poor little Susie was sexually assaulted by this massive brute, and now she's got to sit in a room right next to him while he grills her, that kind of a thing. And that's not what this rule requires. It just requires that a representative of the student.
Yeah, just basic due process that he's allowed to have.
They could say, hey, what about this text message that you texted your best friend and said, I just had this guy over and whatever.
Well, she recovered quickly, Scott. She recovered quickly.
Yeah. So that's one of the protections, this confrontation protection. There's another one about the standard of evidence, elevating it from merely one more than 50%. Or a preponderance of the evidence to a clear and convincing standard. Now, that's not required, but it's encouraged. And I think it's good to encourage it, because if we think of the profound lifelong consequences of expelling a student for sexual violence.
It's on their record forever.
Absolutely.
And they never really recover from it. Yeah.
So the ACLU, in response to the confrontation provision, especially, and I guess the totality of the restoration of these due process rights, sent out these tweets and statements opposing them. And what was so shocking, Tim, we have seen in the past where the ACL does not pick up for certain advocacy, namely and especially, and to my chagrin, the Second Amendment, which they have as an organization decided to sort of not talk about because there's a lot of gun grabber types in there. So they're inconsistent on that, but they don't campaign against gun rights. They just don't support them.
Right. And there's a big difference between being on the sidelines and being on the field and playing defense against.
Yes. And not only that, if there was one part of gun rights that they probably would support, would be due process, because that's sort of, to call it their bread and butter, their sort of foundational principle is that we're all entitled to due process, and that some of the most the worst abuses come from when due process rights are denied.
Well, I think
they actively advocate, Tim, for the revocation dulling down of due process protections for the accused. It's a shocking reversal of that organization's best history.
Well, shocking to you, not so much to me. But let's move on from due process to Jamal Khashoggi and Saudi Arabia. And, the word is filtered down. Evidence is filtered down. Informed speculation has gathered around the notion that the Saudi royal family, the House of Saud, either knew about, participated in, or perhaps even masterminded, and that's not a remote possibility, the murder of dissident Jamal Khashoggi. Now, I don't call him a journalist just because he wrote a couple of pieces for the Washington Post, but he certainly is an active dissident. And it seems clear that there was involvement of one form or another by the Saudi royal family. But Donald Trump said he's not going to base his decision about Saudi Arabia and our future relationship with him on this incident alone, because there's just too many other things at stake. Let's start with what the president said amid the whirling sound of a helicopter in the background about this.
It's America first for me. It's all about America first. We're not going to give up hundreds of billions of dollars in orders and let Russia, China, and everybody else have them. Saudi Arabia, if we broke with them, I think your oil prices would go through the roof. I've kept them down. They're buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of things from this country. If I say we don't want to take your business, if I say we're going to cut it off, they will get the equipment, military equipment and other things from Russia and China. I'm not going to destroy the world economy, and I'm not going to destroy the economy for our country by being foolish with Saudi Arabia.
So what he's saying, Scott, is that his America First, his Make America Great Again policy, says, I'm going to look at what this decision means for the U.S. And he says that we would lose so much in terms of, well, I'm not going to call it trade, purchases, largely of military equipment worth tens of billions of dollars, if not hundreds, from the Saudi Arabians. He's made what many are calling a cynical calculation here, and he is abandoning American principles and all of that. Now, I have a different view on it, but I want to get your take on it first.
Well, I think this is where Trump is so refreshing, for even when he's wrong, he's refreshingly right. And what I mean by that is, I think it's absolutely wrong for the United States to not act in a way that condemns Saudi Arabia for what I believe, and based on my knowledge of the reporting to date and the kingdom itself, is that it's very likely that their leader, is it MBE, they call him?
Whatever.
That he absolutely directed this to happen. And that's why the United States should not be a store. You know, we are part of Arms R Us. And when your customers misbehave, your ability to correct them is compromised because you're desirous of their continued custom. And it's disgusting that that's the position we find ourselves in, because the big arms sellers have bought and sold our legislators, I think, to get to this point. And that's my analysis. But I appreciate, by the way, I'm not being flippant on this point. I'm being genuine. I appreciate that we have a president that actually just says that.
Yep.
Rather than paint some flowery BS story. About how it's some other crap that we're doing because of whatever, when it's all just cold, calculated facts. At least with Donald Trump, I know what the bottom line is. If I want to change the bottom line, I can. Rather than some nebulous kumbaya, whatever, that I'm sure Obama would have come up with to explain the same decision, by the way, because make no mistake, it's not that Trump's bought by the Saudis. Every president's been bought by the Saudis for 40 years.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think you've summarized it well. The point is that so many of these high-minded Democrats and Republicans are saying we must stand up for American principles in our relationship with Saudi Arabia, as if principles have anything to do with our relationship to Saudi Arabia to begin with. If they did, they would be an enemy of ours, because they're an authoritarian regime. They just happen to be a relatively stable authoritarian regime in a sea of madness that is the Middle East and the Arab world.
Sitting on a small ocean of oil.
And a huge, let's just be honest. I mean, the whole relationship is based on oil. It's based on money. It's based on protection of America. And to act like there's some high-minded principle embedded in our relationship with Saudi Arabia is absolutely ridiculous. And Trump,
it should be a motivating call to get out of bed with other countries. These kinds of foreign entanglements were spoken of by the founders and advocated against. Mm-hmm. They rejected them, and for good reason. Now we see ourselves in a place where we can't condemn. You know, the United States should be a shining light around the world for liberty, a beacon of liberty.
And, right, but our relationship with Saudi Arabia has absolutely nothing to do with liberty. It has to do with cheap oil. I think what Trump is doing is he's making an appropriately cynical decision for a relationship that has been cynical from the get-go. And that's why I support what he's done. Now, let's listen to what Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, said about this when he was questioned just a couple of days ago.
Mr. Secretary, based on the President's statement, moving forward, relations with Saudi Arabia won't be affected by the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. And how can you differentiate between the kingdom and the crown prince?
Yeah. So it's a mean, nasty world out there. The Middle East in particular. There are important American interests to keep the American people safe, to protect Americans, not only Americans who are here, but Americans who are traveling and working, doing business in the Middle East. It is the President's obligation, indeed the State Department's duty as well, to ensure that we adopt policies that further the America's national security. So as the President said today, the United States will continue to have a relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're important partner of ours. We will do that with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, its people. That is the commitment that the President made today. It's that straightforward.
So Scott, I mean, what Trump is doing again is saying out loud and making a decision on something that other presidents have thought but never said. And let's be honest, every president has to know how really cynical and corrupt the relationship has always been with Saudi Arabia. So Trump's not going to come in and try to act like there's some matter of high-minded principle involved. I'm sure he's not happy.
I respect the frankness, and I denigrate the decision. It's still a bad decision. He doesn't have to do this. He doesn't have to assert the interests of Raytheon and McDonnell Douglas and all the other military contractors.
So what do you think he should do then? What should he do?
He should call them out, call them murderers, say it's wrong.
And then what? To what end?
Well, I don't favor our entanglement in I don't think that we or the people of the region or Freedom for Americans or anyone has benefited from our entanglement in the region. The idea that Donald Trump or anybody else knows how to make those people free or respect security or privacy, I think is laughable. We are always stepping on our feet over there and everywhere else, making things worse. We could be good at one thing, getting out of each other's way and establishing freedom in the United States by having a minimal government that respects basic rights with the rule of law. That's a tough enough job to get right. This foreign adventure and expansion, it just leads to more foreign adventure and expansion and more government and more entanglements like this.
Well, I think, with all due respect, I think the question isn't more about promoting liberty around the world as it is about providing cheap energy for the American people. Now, let me say this. In maybe 4 years, 6 years, if Trump wins a second term, maybe 8 years, maybe 10 years, we won't have to make this decision if we continue down the path that Trump has us on towards energy independence. Once we're independent and we can create and consume all our own energy, we're not going to have to be involved in that part of the world, because the only reason we're there to begin with is to protect our oil interests, as we've said.
Can you tell me which part of Article 2 says that the president's responsible for energy prices in America? I think that this notion that the president is responsible for cheap energy or anything like that is not only incorrect, but it's really dangerous to him, because it gives these people the rights and abilities to start these wars. The marketplace alone, the giant marketplace of Americans going about their business in a free way, would create abundant, inexpensive energy if left to their own devices. It's this meddling that causes energy prices to go so high. And the temptation, you're following the natural temptations. You meddle a little bit, it doesn't go your way. What do? You meddle a little bit more because you see that one fact. If I could only change that one thing, then everything would be okay. And then it's six other things and then a million other things. And here we are.
Well, you know what, though? The American people have always expressed a preference for cheap energy over the reduction of foreign entanglements. In other words, the people keep electing those who continue the system of importing cheap oil from Saudi Arabia and from OPEC nations in the Middle East and across the world, including Venezuela, whatever. The American people have never raised their voices in unison to say, we object to these kind of cynical, corrupt relationships more than we do to having energy prices spike.
Well, we've got public schools where these kids are taken from their homes and indoctrinated that American military might is good from the get-go. And it's sold at the football games, right? That's why they have the flyovers and everything else. It's a military, it's like mom and apple pie. It's part of our thing. And it's sold. And so it's, you know, if you sell it all year long, it's no surprise that they buy it at the end of the year, right?
Well, a lot of that, Scott, is in an institution like the NFL, which is obviously leftist, run by leftists. Teams are owned mostly by leftists. I mean, they will use the military and they will use the families of veterans for their own promotional purposes to prove that they're not actually anti-American. So let's glorify veterans at halftime of football games so we can prove that we're not the institution that wants to deconstruct the American culture. I mean, isn't that really what's going on?
I think that the reason why you say that basically people are voting for these wars with their, you know, with their votes essentially. And I think that I don't dispute that. But I would say that one of the reasons why that's true is because of them selling wars and militarism through the culture. And I think those owners are absolutely not, while I think they are probably more lefty than not, Tim, I actually don't think it's about them doing it for culture. I think they just want the dough. They got paid a lot of money by the taxpayers for those campaigns. But I think that the fact that Americans are so into, and if you look at the TV, like what's the popular thing to say when somebody's a veteran? Well, thank you for your service, right? Like
it's a most common form of virtue signaling when you thank someone for their service.
Yeah.
But you talk about these sort of the military mindset of the American voter. But if you look at what happened in 2016, I mean, Donald Trump condemned the Iraq war to the point of insulting George W. Bush in one of his most popular states, South Carolina, and he still was able to win.
He said that Bush lied us into war.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Right. And so Trump's agenda militarily is not to just be a muscular neoconservative, who will basically have a hair trigger on using military force.
I don't see that from Trump. Honestly, what I see from him is there's this huge deal on the table, and Trump figures they kill people all the time.
Yeah.
What the hell are we going to queer a deal for? How much money is this for this one guy? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
No. And the truth of the matter is governments do kill people all the time. And so I agree that it is one life. And if it were, if I thought that other lives were going to be saved because of it, maybe I would support sort of doing nothing. But I think that it's good to have clean hands in the matter of liberty so that you can argue for it without saying, well, the stockholders at, at Lockheed aren't going to appreciate this one.
Well, I'm sure glad that you provide, a breath of soaring rhetoric about liberty to balance off my wizened cynicism about the realities of the world.
Hopefully I'm always here for that for you, Tim.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Continue to enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Tim, and everyone else listening.
Absolutely. And so that'll do it for this edition of The Uprising. I'm Tim Donner. Don't forget to subscribe to our LibertyNation.com YouTube channel. A whole lot of good stuff going on there. And also subscribe to our daily briefing at LibertyNation.com. See you next time.